Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to Delicious Talk Radio. This is your host, Gail Delicious Johnson, and this is Bringing Sexy Back, the segment Bringing Sexy Back. And, you know, our shows are for the mature listening audiences only. We discuss sex and other social topics here. Topics we don't discuss are religion and politics. And we also have the most fascinating guests in our studio. And if you're listening to the show and you're not age appropriate, we will not be responsible for our guests or conversations that may influence you. And I hope everybody's having a wonderful evening, as I am. And my co-host is right here with me, Terry. How you doing, darling?
I'm good, Gail. How are you?
I am fantastic, dear. Mitch hasn't gotten to the studio yet, so we're just going to, you know, hold on and wait for him to get here. And then we're going to get this fabulous show on the road because, as you know, and my listening audience know, this is my last live show until, you know, a little bit indefinite. I can't say when I'll be back, but this is the last live show that I will be doing. So, you know,
what
I hope you guys...
What was the name of that song you just played? I was... Oh, my.
That was Diana Ross, The Boss, is the title of that song.
Oh, boy. I tell you, you know, I really call in early just to hear this first song.
Yeah, that's Miss Ross, The Boss. Yes, yes. And I love that song. Yeah, so, you know, like I said, we're waiting for Mitch to get here. And in the meantime, have you been watching the news, you know, all the things that are going on up in Baltimore?
How could I not?
You know, it's really sad because, you know, some people came in and took the opportunity to turn something
mm-hmm.
that was supposed to be more or less a memorial for this young man and get a message
mm-hmm.
across. They
mm-hmm.
turned it all into something, you know, really ugly.
Right.
And, you know, it's just so sad that people...
It is.
Lose control like that. Now all the looting and rioting, and you know, it's not going to bring that young man back.
No,
and they're not going to get any type of
nothing to do with it.
Right, and it's not going to get any type of satisfaction because they're just going to, you know, put their foot that much more in, you know, the neck of the people. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're up there burning up their little stores, burning down the senior citizen buildings, and
right,
it's crazy. You know, it's so sad when we live in a society where, you know, people just don't see eye to eye and, you know, try to
right.
get along, you know, because the world would be such a better place, you know, if people did. And I think Mitch is, well, he was in the building, but he must have ran out really quick. We're going to just hold on because he is.
I had some really bad news about 5 minutes ago. Very, very close girlfriend of mine called me and told me that her daughters found her ex-husband dead.
Oh.
And that kind of did something to me for a minute there.
Mm,
yeah, they came home and found him. And, boy, that's
dead.
Awful. Yeah, that's an awful thing. And so I was,
yeah.
you know, it just hit me. You know, I wasn't expecting to hear that, and it just kind of hit me. So, I'm just kind of
right.
hanging in there, you know, trying to absorb
right.
this thing here. But mm-hmm. other than that, you know, my day
yeah.
was a little off key. I've been under the weather and in a lot
mm-hmm.
of pain, and
wow.
and my blood pressure medicine ain't right. And so I saw my doctor today.
Well, you know what? We're going to cure all that because our guest is in the building.
Okay,
and
good.
I'm going to give you the listening audience, a little bit of who we're going to be spending the next hour and a half with. He's a graduate of Cadoza High School. He has a BA degree in criminal justice from the University of the District of Columbia. He joined the Metropolitan Police Department in Washington, D.C. in 1986. He served as a homicide detective for 23 years and a sexual assault detective for 2 years. He was elected into the Cadoza High School Hall of Fame in 2011 for serving over 25 years in the Cadoza area as a youth and athletic coach and mentor. He gives lectures with the United States Attorney's Office at area colleges and high schools. He's an author of two fictional novels, Stranger in the Streets, published in 2010, and Damaged Roots, published in 2011. Contributing to his other accolades, he is one of Washington, D.C.'s distinguished film creator, writer, and director. His first feature film, Boss, will be released in the summer of 2015. He is busy working on the development of a second feature film titled Creeps. Without further ado, let us welcome author, writer, director, and film creator, Mitch Cradle.
Hello.
Hey, Mitch. How are you, dear?
I'm doing great. How are everyone doing?
Fine.
Wow. Your bio is just so impressive, you know, all the things that you've done for the police department and the youth. I'm very impressed by, you know, you dealing with the youth, being a mentor, and, you know, all the things that you did concerning the youth, as well as the, you know, the older people and just people in general. So let me ask you, how did you come to even pick the career of being a police officer?
Well, as a kid, most definitely, I grew up through the Metropolitan Police Boys and Girls Club, and I always looked up to the police officers who were my mentors. Even though I had a father in the household, we weren't close. We didn't have a relationship. We didn't do the father and son thing. So the police at the Boys and Girls Club were basically like fathers to me. Even though they rotated through the different seasons, depending on what athletic event was going on, they were like the fathers in the neighborhood. So just the rapport they had with us always gave me a good relationship with police. And then as a young man, I was, 21 years old at the time, had a daughter going on 3 years old. I had to provide some stability to her. So I stopped going to school at the time to join the police department so I can help my daughter's mother take care of her.
Wow, that's very commendable. And when you had a career with the police department for a number of years, when did you switch over to being with the homicide crew? And what made you go?
I joined the police department in 1986, and when I got on the streets in the spring of 1987, I mean, I didn't mind doing the patrol officer thing. I did that for 2 years. But I was just always intrigued with shows like Miami Vice, and I just always had this thing about just being a detective. So when I had the opportunity to go downtown in 1989, I was blessed at a young age to have been a detective since 1989. And then I did burglary and arson for like 2 years just to learn how to be a detective. Then in 1991, I went to homicide, and I spent 23 years there.
Wow. What was the most difficult case that you've ever dealt with being a homicide detective?
I can't say exactly which particular case, but the ones that bothered me the most that was the most difficult were the ones of the case I responded to, and the victims were kids that I knew. And by coaching sporting teams in the city, just seeing them kids lying there on the pavement, and I have to be the one to go notify their mother, who more than likely I've known since she was young as well, to let them know that their son has been murdered. So when I come knocking on the door with a suit and tie, the mothers would just look at me, and they knew I had bad news to deliver. And those cases were always the most troublesome ones.
Wow. And you also spoke with the United States District Attorney. What were those speeches about?
Well, I do a great deal. They asked me a few years ago to assist when Ron Machum joined the department as the United States Attorney for D.C. They just asked me to do different things. First, several schools would come down to the attorney's office. They always asked me to speak about my life experiences, being on a job, being in the community. So then I started doing it with the colleges, started doing it with the high schools, the middle schools, and even today I even did it in front of a police recruit class. I think I've done maybe three of those. So whatever the U.S. Attorney's Office needed to do, because I've worked so closely with them on my cases throughout the years, I've always been available to assist them with speaking to youth in our city in reference to anything that needs to be touched on.
Okay. And also, you was elected into the Cardoza High School Hall of Fame in 2011. How did that make you feel, and what was going on with that?
Well, I was shocked when I was notified. I received a letter telling me that I was nominated for the Cardoza High School Hall of Fame. And I was shocked. I was like, why am I getting this? I'm still living? And I don't pay any of that stuff any attention. And then when I went there, I saw a lot of the Cardoza legends. I mean, these are guys who I've always looked up to when I was a kid, guys that I've heard about as I was a kid. Matter of fact, one of the guys that was there was he's the coach at Georgetown with John Thompson, Mike Riley. He was a Cardoza alumnus, and he received the award that night also. And just to be among those people, Bob Hedden, who was a basketball longtime coach at H.C. Winston High School. I mean, we're talking about guys who were my heroes. I'm standing in the same hotel room with you guys, being honored. Most definitely, I was the youngest. I was the youngest person there, and it just was so humbling, and it was just great. And you know, I wasn't the greatest athlete in Cardoza, but I believe my community service in that Cardoza area for now what 30 years was what really got me elected to Cardoza Hall of Fame.
So what sports did you play when you were in high school?
When I went to Cardoza, I played football for 3 years.
Okay. And you also coached and mentored young athletic students. Was that football?
Yes, I coached football, basketball. Those are my main two sports, most definitely basketball, and I did baseball for a short period. But the Boys and Girls Club, where I did my community service, was a block away from Cardoza High School, so it was right there in that Cardoza area, right there, 14th and Clifton Northwest.
Okay. Wow, that's very impressive, you know, because nowadays children need some type of leadership and guidance, and you definitely, you know, put yourself out there. And so when did you get into writing?
Writing just became sort of almost like habit for me. I've always loved to write. Even when in school, I used to always write too much back in middle school and high school. And the teachers would always say, you're writing too much. And it was just, once I get on a subject, I just couldn't stop writing about whatever the subject was. So what happened was I received a murder case back in 2004 at Colonel Brooks Tavern. I don't know if you all remember that tavern. It was over in Brooklyn Station area, Northeast, with three individuals were murdered, three employees were murdered inside of a freezer. So I had
I remember that.
And after that case, during that case, one of the victims was a guy that I was raised with. And that just blew my mind. And I said, man, I gotta start writing about some of this stuff. So I sat down and just started writing. So I had, over the course of a few years, I just put my entire career, my entire life, I put everything into a novel. And I went to the general counsel office for D.C., and they told me, for the police department, they told me I couldn't publish it. The book is called Homicide and Me, Living Black and Blue. They told me I couldn't publish it because I was on the job. I can't write about the job while I'm on the job. If I wanted to write books, I had to write fiction. So that's when I started writing fictional stories.
So your fiction, is there a little bit of reality in them? I can imagine that there is because...
Well... I'll let you finish your question. Go ahead.
Yeah, simply because of the fact of the job that you're doing, and then you mentioned, you know, finding a friend of yours dead. So I can only imagine that you put a little bit of reality in your book, in your first book, Stranger in the Street. Can you give us a little bit about that, and is there some reality in that book?
Well, even with Stranger in the Streets, what I do is I'm pretty good with developing characters. So what I did was I took maybe 50 young men in D.C. that I've interviewed or interrogated or ran across, had some type of police community relationship with, and I took a great deal of characters and put them into one character, one of the main characters called Black, Ricky Walker, in the book. And I was able to just take that character from a lot of different people. So he's not just one person. And when people were reading the books, a lot of people were getting upset. A lot of people were calling me, telling me I was talking about them, talking about their family member. And I wanted to bring the realness of the situations I've been in and put it in a fictional environment. So many people believe this book is about a certain person or whoever that certain person may be to them. And it's really not. It's all fiction, but it's real life feelings, emotions, situations, and everything, but the characters are fictional.
Okay, what is Stranger in the Street? What is that story particularly about?
Stranger in the Streets, a lot of people did pick up on what the social, I tried to use social issues in my books, and his first social issue was about priorities and loyalties. And the book is about a young man who was raised in the neighborhood, which I use Clifton Terrace, which is a neighborhood I'm very familiar with, and he committed a murder when he was 13 years old, and his friend took responsibility for that murder because his friend knew he could not survive in juvenile detention for a long period of time, which at that time it would be 8 years because they're only 13 years old. And at that particular time, their lives separate. one, I mean, they're totally separated because the guy goes off to juvenile detention center. And then when they reunite, the kid who actually committed the murder is an undercover police officer, and his friend who did the time for him have no idea that his best friend is a police officer. So now this police officer is caught between his loyalties and priorities because he owed his life to his friend who just spent his juvenile life in jail, in prison for him.
Wow. That sounds really good. You know,
It's deep. It's real deep. It covers a lot of different emotions. It shows how young men grow up in the streets, how they relate to their kind of love, how they, a lot of them don't grow up through family love, they grow up through street love. So I wanted to write a book about how decision-making is very important with our young people. And that book is in certain schools. The juveniles over the D.C. jail, they chose to read that book over a lot of well-established office books because that was a book they heard about. It. And when they read it, I got so many good reviews from the warden over there about how these young men who are charged with murder enjoyed their story.
Right, because, you know, that, as you mentioned, it's, you know, probably from something that really actually happened. But the good thing when you're an author, you can put anything you want in a book in fictional form, and that's how people become attracted to it because, like you said, they were relating to the book saying, that's about me, that's about me. But, you know, for real, you could do it in a way that, you know, it can be about them, but, you know, you're not admitting it's about them. So
exactly.
That was really good. And
Mitch,
your
I have
next
a question for you, if it's okay, Gail.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Gail, you know, I have a daughter who retired from NYPD,
mm-hmm.
and my son-in-law just retired 2 weeks ago from NYPD in Brooklyn.
Wow.
And so, and my mother was chief in DA's office in Manhattan, which she retired from, so I'm pretty familiar with that whole thing. My question to you is, my daughter never told me any bad stuff that ever went on because she knew I couldn't handle it. Did you ever, were you ever right with your parents or your close sisters and brothers and tell them any of the terrible things that you had to deal with?
No, I did not because I never took my job home with me. When I
mm-hmm.
left work, I was back in the community doing dealing with the kids. So my kids were always part of my activities dealing with the kids on the streets of D.C., and I didn't want them to hear the stories about the things I was doing on the job. It was always the things in the community. So I didn't want to bother them with that stuff, even though because they were community-oriented, they would have understood a lot of it. I didn't want them to know about that. The graphic things I was dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, Damaged Roots in 2011. What was the realism in that book, and tell us a little bit about what that story was about.
Well, Damaged Roots is sort of like a part two to Strange in the Streets, but what I did was I wanted to use another social issue, which in that book is child sexual abuse. And I sort of wanted to stay on the same storyline and talk about how this undercover police officer, once he, I don't want to say what happened to him in the first book, but in his life in the second book, it's their interactions and dealing with the police department itself who does not know that he's undercover.
Mm-hmm.
So in that particular book, I was able to develop two young men who were sexually molested as kids. And the investigation is surrounded the murder of multiple women. And these two guys are the suspects. Police chasing one person, not knowing it's the next person. And I just wanted to show just the different ways that child sexual abuse can affect young men as they get older. And even though it's a fictional story, I was just during the course of years interviewing young men who have been sexually abused as kids, I was able to take some of their experiences from reality and put it into the fictional story to make it seem real. And I was able to make the story entertaining as well as cover a social issue that a lot of people don't want to discuss.
Right. You hit the nail on the head with that because a lot of stories that these authors are writing today, you know, deal with drugs, you know, the different elements. But some of the things that, you know, are real and things that are going on that people don't want to face, like, for instance, when you spoke of the rape and the molestation, they need to understand that things like that, that's an epidemic, you know, and it needs to be dealt with. And people need to be addressed when it comes to them even being victims or being victimized by, you know, such an atrocity, because I'm a survivor myself of rape and molestation and domestic violence. So I really want to, you know, for people, you know, to entertain themselves with books that have substance to them. And your books do have substance, just listening to the little synopsis that you gave us. So that's really good. That's really good that you did that, and you're saying that's more or less a sequel from the first book. And, you know, I'm quite sure, like you had mentioned, that you're getting plenty of reviews from it, good reviews from it, because people know when a book is good, you know, it's full of substance opposed to. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the other books that people write about the drugs and this and that, but that's an ongoing thing. You know, every day you see a drug dealer on this corner or that corner, you know, that's just the way life is. But, you know, social issues and things like that need to be really addressed. And I do appreciate you for writing those books.
Thank
now,
you.
We're going to take a little break, and we're going to come back. And my listening audience, if you have any questions out there, feel free to call in. The number is 646-652-2877, and hit the one that will indicate that you have your hand up and you have a question for Mitch. But we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Bringing Sexy Back, right here on Delicious Talk Radio. There is no religion or politics spoken here, only delicious adult conversation. Audience participation is encouraged, so log in and create an account to engage in conversation in our chat room. Feel free to call in with your questions and comments at 646-652-2877. That's 646-652-2877. And let's get this delicious talk conversation going.
I'm on the phone. I'm just coming to tell you. I'm seeing where you're making noise.
Listen up, I got to tell you about this beautiful author and publisher, Gail Delicious Johnson. Gail Delicious Johnson is proud to announce the publication of her new, revised issue of her latest suspenseful novel, Back to Zero. Read this riveting story of intrigue, conflict, love, and suspense. Follow the trail of abuse, secrets, lies, and love. And check it out. You can't just read the back of the book, because you have to prepare yourself for the mind-blowing, explosive ending. Order your personally autographed copy of Back to Zero by visiting www.jjpublishing.com. That's www.jayjaypublishing.com. Back to Zero is a fictional story with a dash of reality. It's a tale about Anthony Thomas, a man who lost the most precious things in his life, starting with his first childhood love, Gloria. Tragedy soon followed after losing his mom to cancer, and shortly thereafter, he lost his wife, Lynn, and son, Junior, in a horrific car crash. With each traumatic incident, Anthony was branded, sending him back to zero. 30 years later, Anthony runs into Gloria, and the flames in their hearts are still burning. Gloria, now a law enforcement official who also comes with baggage, a psychotic husband named Wayne Anderson who is out of control. He, too, is a law enforcement official that's abusive, jealous, and an alcoholic. Wayne treats Gloria miserable. While snooping behind his wife, he finds out that she had research information concerning Anthony on the internet. Wayne goes into a rage of madness like a rabid dog because in his sick, twisted mind, he feels threatened and accuses Gloria of sleeping with Anthony. Often he would evict her from the house, but not realizing the night would come when he forces his wife straight into the arms of Anthony. After spending an intense, earth-shattering night of lovemaking, Gloria opens up and confesses to Anthony that she still loves him. Rekindling their relationship is dangerous, and Wayne will stop at nothing to make his wife and her first love's life a miserable hell while fighting his own demons. Wayne harbors a deep, dark, and deadly secret, one he thought he and only the devil knew. Find out what happens when Gloria uncovers the truth about her abusive, lawless husband's mysterious past. The devastation will bring the three of them together in an explosive confrontation. Find out the shocking secrets Wayne harbored and prepare yourself for who will pay the ultimate price for his lawless actions. Gail Delicious Johnson says, Back to Zero will take you where the law becomes the abuser. Order this fast-paced, action-packed, filled drama by best-selling author Gail Delicious Johnson from her web store at JJ Publishing. That's J-A-Y-J-A-Y Publishing.com. Remember, abuse is never an option.
All right, we're back. And the song you heard was the Delphonics, La 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 Means I Love You. We're here this evening with our very special guest, Mitch Creedle, who is an author, film writer, producer, and director. And he also is working, well, he just finished a full-length picture, motion picture that's going to be debuted in August. So we're going to get on, you know, with Mitch about his career and how did you even become involved with the filming that you've done.
What I did was after the second book, I just said, let me pick up a camera. I had one big, large camera, and I hooked up with a good friend of mine, Anthony Commodore, and asked him to help me film this web series, because I had tried to film a web series a year prior to that called The Real Hood Wives of D.C., which is a comedy
I saw that.
Comedy. And I didn't do the filming. I just did the writing. And you know, a friend of mine was on the filming. He, you know, told me a little bit about it, and I just got intrigued with it. And he sort of fell off because he got busy doing some of the things that he was doing. He was very active in the community, dealing with a lot of kids. So I was stuck with wanting to be creative, and I had a camera. So I said, let me just start filming some things myself. And that's when I had jumped into another web series called Dirtier Than Ever. And it just kept going, and there's just a lot of support from different people. And, you know, I've created a website, did a lot of short stories, did a lot of things with kids, and on and on and on. So now I'm just ready to venture out. I'm working on trying to bring a television series here in D.C. with an organization called Empower Group that I was asked to join. And I'm just finished my first feature film. So I'm just exploring and just to see exactly where this can take me, because my creativity just, it doesn't stop. I can't sit still. I just have to keep creating things. So I just want to see where it takes me.
Right. You are a multi-talented young man. I have to say that. You're multi-talented.
Thank you.
And
I appreciate that.
I have one other question from one of our other co-hosts, Jade. Her phone is not working, and she asked if I would ask you, if you're not on the job anymore, will you ever consider writing the true story that they told you couldn't write?
Oh, it's done. I finished the story. I'm going to add some more things to it. Oh, Homicide and Me Living Black and Blue is complete.
Okay.
It's just sitting on the shelf, and I'm due to retire later this year, probably in the fall. So then all I'm going to do is clean it up. And when I put this book out there, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, because this is real facts.
Toot it.
So people will be able to put themselves in my shoes from growing up in D.C. to making life decisions, to joining the police department, to investigating murders, to dealing with families, dealing with some of the most notorious murder suspects in the city from A through Z. It's almost like a training guide, but it would actually let them know how everything went down for me, from emotions to, I mean, just from the beginning to end of every aspect of any and everything I've done on the job as far as a homicide detective.
All right.
So this book is going to be based on actually the truth.
Yes, it's the truth. It's the real deal. No fiction in this.
Okay. Well, I can't wait for that. Okay. Now, you started when you picked up the camera, and you did the Hood Wives of, was it Southeast?
No, it was just called, it was a comedy little, I don't even like talking about it, but I was embarrassed, I didn't know what I was doing, but I tried. It was called the Hood Wives,
you know,
the Real Hood Wives of D.C.
Right.
And when I started looking at other people's stuff, I was like, oh my God,
mm-hmm.
I did everything wrong.
But, you know, from a person who doesn't have that eye, you know, just from somebody just watching it, they wouldn't even know, you know, the things that, any mistakes that you made in, because when I watched it was hilarious to me. It was really hilarious. Now,
I had no idea what I was doing.
Well, you did a good job. Now, as far as your actors, where do you, I know you do auditions and of the such, but your actors, when they come to you, do they have any type of experience, or are they getting experience on the job?
Well, to be honest with you, for me, I like dealing with people with no experience. And I say that because I'm learning, and I know they want to learn. And even though we deal with some of the people who do have experience, like with Adeed Muhammad, he's been acting for years. I put him with a film with a lot of people with no experience. And during the process, he's the acting coach. He's assisting everybody. He's helping everybody get into their roles. And he's basically bringing them to life. So dealing with someone like him helps me. Then I have Commodore, who's experienced dealing with actors. He helps me a lot. So I like dealing with inexperienced people because just by me trying to get into film work, I remember a few years ago when I went to a few filmmakers in D.C., and I offered my services before I even started making anything. I offered my services to consult with them as far as police stuff. I said, look, you know, I'm a detective. I got experience. You got any scenes that need help with police stuff, I'm willing to help you. I'm just trying to learn the business. Boom, boom, boom. I'm just trying to get my foot in the door. And no one called me. No one reached out to me.
Wow.
Like, people were ignoring me. So I said, you know what, I'm going to start doing my own thing. I want to spend, you know, the money to get all the equipment I needed. And I said, I'm going to start dealing with people, and I'm not going to treat people the way that I was treated. I'm going to give beginners opportunities instead of turning my back on beginners. Because if I'm writing something where a beginner can play the role, I'm going to use a beginner. I mean, how hard is it in a lot of situations to play yourself?
Right. Right, because I had the opportunity to be in one of your short films, Where Have You Been? And Abdeed was also in that film, and of course a lot of other young men that I had met at that particular time. And I can say when I came to do it, I was really nervous, but once I got, you know, in there and, you know, all the guys were cooperative and, you know, just pitching in, I really felt like, hey, I can do this, you know, and I did make a few mistakes.
And you did. And you did great.
Yeah.
I make a mistake. I just made a mistake today. Everybody makes mistakes. Mistakes is not the mistake we make. It's what we do after the mistake. So
you
were the mother of that movie, and everybody loved you for doing it. And like you said, with the deed, he was the father of that movie. And, you know, it just made it seemed like it was a family movie.
Right, and then the fact of me learning things like behind the scenes, you know, you know, how things were put together, you know, that the audience don't see. They just see the finished product. You know, that was really amazing to me too, you know, because everything ran just as smooth, you know, and everything came together, you know, and I didn't even know we was going to do it in one night, but everything went well, and it looked pretty good. I was, you know, a lot of people had gave me my little accolades from that, and you know, so I had that to add to my little repertoire.
Exactly.
And also in Diva Wars, I'm in episode 6. So, you know, as a walk on, you know, even that, you know, just being around people that make you feel comfortable and people who don't criticize you and people who really want you to, you know, come up. In other words, you know, people who are there for you and help you out, opposed to someone who has a knife in your back or whatever, you know, like when you said they never called you. But, you know, trust and believe that you are going to bring Hollywood to D.C., I'm claiming that for you.
I appreciate it. I'm not the only one trying, but I'm most definitely putting my best efforts towards it, and I'm steady learning, growing, meeting new people, connecting with new people. I just got with my guy Keith Childs, who knows everyone and who's connected with the industry. So I mean, a lot of things are happening. It's just a process that we're learning, and like I said, my man Calm, still my right hand man. And we're gonna make some things happen. It's just a matter of time.
Right now, Anthony Commodore, he's pretty good as well, because I've seen his work that he's done as well.
Yeah.
And you two together are a dynamic duo. So
that's like he worked with me on my domestic violence project, The Last Beating, which a lot of people enjoy.
Yeah.
So he's most definitely he's very talented.
Yeah, and so you want to be wifey. You know, I could just go on and on and on.
Oh, yeah, man, about that one, too. Well, it's,
we
just get together. We just do stuff. Sometimes I can't remember some of the things we worked on because, I mean, we're colleagues, we're friends, we're like brothers, we're filmmakers together. So we just do stuff, and I can't remember half the stuff we do together.
Right. But trust and believe, you guys are the dynamic duo, and you guys do great work. And, you know, great things are going to happen. They're definitely going to happen, you know. And has anyone ever said that you're the next Tyler Perry or you're the next this or the next
that? I'd be like, I don't want to. I'd be like, just call me Mitch.
Right, right.
I mean,
because
I appreciate it. I appreciate the compliments.
Right.
I just want to be Mitch because I'm still learning and growing, and I want to continue to learn and grow because Tyler Perry, even though he's probably still learning and growing, he's there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, because I get sometimes people telling me I'm like Zane, but no, I'm not like Zane. I'm Gail, you know, but
exactly.
Like you do, I appreciate the compliment, but, you know, you can't compare me to someone else when I'm doing my own thing. So, you know, that's very good, too, because I know that, you know, generally people say, well, you're going to be the next Tyler Perry. No, I'm going to be the next Mitch Creedle, the one who's going to bring Hollywood to
D.C. I won't be the first Mitch Creedle.
Right.
That's why I want to be the first. I want to be the Mitch Creedle.
Yeah, the first. I'm sorry. The first.
I just want to be Mitch Creedle.
The first. Right, Mitch Creedle, the one who brought Hollywood to D.C. And there's so much talent in D.C., you know, because looking at the clip to Boss, I mean, I'm just so waiting for this to come out. Now, is
you
it going to be...
You didn't even see it all. Oh, my God.
I know. I just saw the clip. Right. But is it going to be in a theater or you picked a venue where it's going to be shown in August?
Right now, I haven't locked down a certain venue, but I'm thinking about using a venue that would allow me to do two shows, and then right afterwards we can do the after party. I don't want to separate it where I get a theater, then we have to leave the theater or another venue who, once we finish, we have to leave. I want people to stay.
Right,
network,
right.
Socialize, embrace. I want to give these actors the entire experience. I want them to pull up in limousines. They're going to get out a big stretch limousine. I want them to have a red carpet. I want people taking photographs. I want people doing interviews.
All right.
I want them to have that. The back. We're going to have the big backdrop. Do the premiere. We have the after party, the friends, family. I want to give them the entire Hollywood experience because this is D.C. Wood, and I want them to have that experience that some may never in their lifetime get, and that's my appreciation for them being in this film for me.
Wow. Well, that is just, that's just, you know, marvelous. Now, let me ask you about how do you come up with the concepts to some of your films? Like, for instance, I know domestic violence because you've dealt in that in your job, but how do you come up with the concepts and how to create the, you know, the 10 or 15 minute short series?
Well, with anything, even with the feature film, I think something will come to my mind about something that occurred, like with Boss, something happened with a money situation. And I'm like, oh, my God, the love of money is the root of all evil. So I said, let me develop a story around money and how money destroyed friendships and how money just blinds people, how money changes people, how money make people do things that they normally wouldn't do. So I take an issue or situation, and then I develop a story around that issue or situation.
Okay. Wow, that is really – and tell us a little bit about Boston, a little bit about the actors that are their parts in the movie.
Yeah, the little bit I can talk about is most definitely a little bit that I've always put on social media. Boston is just about a group of friends who, as they got older, the greed of money changed all of them. They went negative directions as far as trying to live a lifestyle of making money. Hakeem, which is played by Thomas Sykes, he's a drug dealer. Sweets, who's played by LaSonya Odom, she's a madam. She has ladies, and then their world crap. First, they're both doing well in their own worlds, but when their world crashes because of money, then all hell breaks out, and that's when the story just takes off, and it just takes you on a ride from that point on.
Wow. Yes, I've been keeping up with the little trailers and the little scripts and little different things that you've been posting, and like I said, I cannot wait for August.
And I mean to cut you off, but a lot of people in D.C. who are very familiar with a young lady by the name of Sweet Maddie, they're waiting for it because I'm dedicating the movie to her. So what I did was I took two characters, Sweets and Maddie, and they're two different characters in the story. And the person who I know as Sweet Maddie, who passed away in 2006, a lot of her characteristics and a lot of me and her relationship of how I knew her is in that particular story, because here it is early 1991 when the homicide was going crazy in the city. She's a very street smart young lady, and I'm a young homicide detective, and we developed a friendship that a lot of people didn't understand. But we were real good friends, and she made me a good homicide detective because of her street smart and her street knowledge. I tried to get information from her about a case, and when I couldn't get the information from her, we developed a friendship, but it gave me it made me earn a lot of respect from her. But I'm like, damn, here it is. She ain't telling me nothing, but she still want to be my friend. And we had a great film of like brothers and sisters, and she was so street. She was like a character in the Donald Glover Iceberg Slim book. She was just that street smart and just, I mean, she was just an amazing person. And unfortunately, she passed away in 2006. So I said, when I make my first street movie, I'm going to dedicate to her. So a lot of people in D.C. who are very familiar with her as a D.C. street legend, when they see this movie, they're going to see a lot of characteristics of her in this movie.
Okay, now, Sweet Maddie, the picture that's into the trailer, is that her?
That's her, exactly. That's her. Yeah.
She was kind of young, wasn't she, when she died?
Yeah, she passed away. Yeah, she was young when she passed away. She was young, and she was just, she made me a good homicide type. But some things, when I didn't understand certain things, I used to call her. I was like, this mean, what that mean? She said, boy, you don't know nothing. I'm like, I do know something. I just don't know what you know. I mean, I wasn't a thug. I played sports. I got in trouble as a juvenile, yeah, get locked up for little stupid stuff. But I wasn't a go-hard thug. Certain things I didn't know, I asked her. She's always telling me. Right? When I'm interviewing people, dudes start talking about stuff, I call her and say, this dude talking about such and such. What the hell is that? And she would tell me. I'm like, oh, all right, cool, my bad. So she was very influential in me becoming a good homicide detective. She helped me understand a lot of the guys I was dealing with, a lot of guys I'm dealing with and interviewing and locking up, were guys who she was dating and making money with, getting money from. So our relationship was perfect. And I didn't let nobody bother her. And I think a lot of people knew that. It was almost like I was somewhat of her protection because we were real close. I was not going to let nobody bother her.
Wow. Well, that is really something, because I'm quite sure, you know, if Maddie was living, she'd be, I'm quite sure her heart would be filled with joy to see that, you know, you dedicated this movie to her. Because
if she was living, she'd be on scene telling everybody what they're doing wrong.
it's just
how she was. When I used to do stuff wrong, she'd be like, no, boy, what are you doing? You don't do that? No, that ain't no. So, I mean, she was just very street-oriented, but she was a sweet person, and a lot of people, everybody always dedicating, which is not wrong. They dedicate things to people who they know of or heard of or who are of a influential level in life or whatever. But I wanted to dedicate this first movie to someone who, other than D.C. Streets, people don't know about her. She has a story, too. She's nobody to the world, but she has a story.
Right. Right. Well, we have Jadino on the line as well, and he is in the movie, too. So I'm going to let him speak about his part, give us a little bit about who he is in the movie and what his part is. Jadino?
Oh, yeah. I'm Dino.
Good evening, dear. How you doing?
No, I'm Jay Dino, but my name is Dino. I guess Mitch wanted to keep it simple for me.
You know, when you first came to the show, I was calling you Jadino, but okay. Okay, Jay, give us a little bit of, you know, what your part is in the movie.
Oh, well, I'm like a bodyguard for one of the madams. You know, I take care of the girls, make sure they're straight. You know, pretty much like I do for real. So he gave me a cuddly, bouncer-type role. I protect everybody, you know. I'm one of the ones that put their life on the line when it comes time to protect the women.
Okay. All right. Well, and you also, did you contribute to doing any of the makeup on the show?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be doing all the effects on it. I think he's going to turn me loose this time. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I'm going to let him go crazy on this one.
Wow, I just can't wait for this movie.
I got a question as a fan.
Okay.
Hey, Mitch, can we go on a ride along before you retire?
You ride with me?
Yeah, I want to be in the
man,
back.
You lost your mind. Man, you been a, you know, man, you lost your mind.
I want to
ride
back,
in D.C. You're going to ride in D.C. You're not riding with me, bro. I'll meet you there. No, you ain't riding with me.
I'm sorry.
People don't know, man, them ain't good friends. We were in 10th grade. You're not riding with me, no.
I thought I could get, you know, we could pick up some people.
I'm telling you in advance. Tell
them. Oh, okay. Just checking. I thought you would say you're on the show, but I kind of...
I'll be honest, on the show, too. No, you would never ride with me, bro.
Ooh.
It'd be like Martin. No, it'd be like Kevin Hart and Ice Cube. We ain't... no way. What was that little movie? Ride Along?
Do that.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
No, we ain't going to do that.
Mm. Wow.
Got to be doing real police work. Oh, no.
Okay.
Let's talk about another short film that you did, because you've done so many. You do them so quickly, you know, but another short film was Wifey.
Oh, yeah, that was. Yeah, that was a little
that was shocking to me, and
yeah.
I wasn't prepared for the ending. You know, so if anybody hasn't seen Wifey, you can pull it up on YouTube. But, you know, situations like that do occur. You
yeah,
know,
they,
so,
they do, and that's why I wanted to. That's why I wanted to create that movie. Just looking at a lot of Facebook posts, I saw how people kept talking about side chicks, side Joes, or whoever, whatever. I think it just created a little story about that kind of lifestyle. And that's what I did. And the actors in it, they did it. There's only three of them. They delivered it. It was cool. Commodore and Janina was right there with me making it. And it was cool. No one knew what was going to happen at the end. And we wanted to keep
right.
it that way. And
right.
basically, what happened, she was saying, if you want all the responsibilities of being a wife, okay, bam, here you go.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She got
bam.
All them responsibilities.
Yeah.
You know, and just like I said, your stories have substance, and it's always like a little twist, you know. Even in Where Have You Been, when my grandson had, when they had, well, the father had gotten himself together, and
yes.
the brothers, they wanted to beat him up and all this whole kind of stuff, and he's asking, where are you going? He said, I'm going to take my baby, my girl out, because she'll never have to ask, where have I been? You know, so that's a message to these young men out here that are having babies and, you know, deserting them and, you know, walking out of their children's lives. You know, you do have these men who are dedicated and love their children and will take care of them. But that was really a heartfelt movie. And I really felt honored to do it, you know. But I just wish I hadn't messed up. But
you ain't messed up, girl. Please, come on, man. You know, no one messes up. That's my motto. No one messes up. Let's do it, get it done, and make it work. No one messes up. Messing up is messing up and trying is not part of my vocabulary. Let's just do it.
But you know, like the viewing audience didn't know it, so I'll take that. I'll just say that I didn't mess up. But you know, it was really a privilege for me to do that, and. You know, I'm keeping the dust off of my acting shoes. So, you know, anytime you need me or whatever, just, you know, you got my number and everything like that.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah, so now you're getting ready to work on another feature film. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and like I say, it's another issue. It's, I did a film a while back with very talented young lady, her name was Dana Dane. We did a short film called Cyber Love. That's also on my website on YouTube.
Right, I saw
and
that.
It's sort of like a spinoff from there. And it's basically about the lifestyle of a group of guys who constantly creep on the internet. They creep through social media, the inbox. They constantly drive women crazy because of the things they're doing in the inbox. They're trying to date through social media. They're trying to do this and do that. And it's sort of like their secret life, but on the flip side, they're married.
Mm-hmm.
So creeps is about that lifestyle. That's what women call these guys. They call these guys creeps. And these guys, they are relentless. They don't stop. And it's funny because when I first put out there, I even had some of my male friends contact me and say, man, I hope you're not talking about me, are you? They were like, well, I'm a creep, man. You ain't talking about me. So I'm laughing about. And then women on Facebook start sending me their inboxes of guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there laughing and cracking up and dying laughing because, and I told the woman, please block the names. But then someone accidentally were not blocking the names out. I saw a dude names that I knew, and I'm like, oh, my God. I was like, this is crazy. It was just funny. So just that little experience right there alone, dealing with the women on Facebook and reps of the inboxes and some of the male guys that I know, I know this is going to be a very funny, this is why it's going to be a comedy drama. It's going to be a very funny movie, and I'm not going to expose anyone. It ain't about missing nobody's name, because I'm not about that. Even the names that I did right. see, I'll take that to my grave. So it's just a matter of me just getting material to develop the story to make it very funny. Because what people can have personal lives is their business. I care less. But I was just appreciated that when all these young ladies sent me all of their personal inboxes, oh, my God, I was cracking up. Even I read it today, I still laugh.
Wow. Wow, now that is really something, you know, when you can get material and use it in a positive way.
Yes.
You know, because that's
exactly.
Yeah, because that's exactly what you're doing, using it in a positive way.
Gil, if somebody look at the movie and be like, oh, my God, that's me. Hey, that's not my problem. I'm not using it.
Right. That is true, because, you know, just like you said, and when they read your book, everybody was saying, oh, they're talking about
exactly.
me, that's my mother,
exactly.
whatever, whatever. But, you know, you're not responsible for that. If they feel that way, that's on them. You know?
Exactly.
That's on them. But, Mitch, I do really, you know, really do appreciate what you do for the community and the youth as well. You also did some films for the youth.
Yes,
can you elaborate on a few of them as well?
Yes. Oh, my God. Like I do, I work with the kids at the Rita Bright Family Youth Center, and the kids there, they wanted to make movies. So we made at least five short films. And the first one we made, we did two. And it was so nice because after we made those two short films, they had what's called a movie night. Oh, my God, they had the big screen in the gym. They had the red carpet. They came in, they did the interviews. They had the whole, these are kids now from ages, maybe 8 to 13. They had the whole experience of Hollywood, and they set the whole gym up. That was their thing. It was a Hollywood night. They set the gymnasium. I mean, it was so wonderful for them and their families in the community to see themselves, and they rented a big screen projector, and we showed them the gymnasium. And just that whole experience was unbelievable. And them kids did a hell of a job. And even with that, one of the stories, Raindrops, I got a call from some people in St. Louis. It's an orphanage in St. Louis, which is one of the biggest orphanages in the country. They showed it to their kids because that first movie, Raindrops, is about a girl who went to orphanage. And they loved it, so they put it in their rotation on some kids' channel in St. Louis. D.C. didn't give me any love, but he is out here in St. Louis. They put that short film in their rotation for kids' films, so I was honored. I was honored for that. And he had a story to it. And then the other one, Cashing Out, was comical, but it had a story to it about young boys who found a pile of drug money, and they went shopping. Instead of them turning it in, they went on a shopping spree, and they had fun, and they were finally confronted about the money by the police. They were broke. They still spent all the money. So it was just, they just wanted to have fun with it, and I just wanted to give the kids the experience. So when I dealt with the kids at that age level, then the peewees, the babies came at me. I'm talking the 5, 6, 7-year-olds. When are you going to make us a movie? So I had to make them a movie called, I don't remember the name of it. So they wanted a movie, and we did that. Then the other kids wanted another movie, so we ended up making five. We're about to do Cashing Out Part 2. They said, Mitch, you ain't been back up here. You busy dealing with them adults. When you come back and deal with us. So now this summer we're going to do Cashing Out Part 2, make it a little longer. And I'm just happy that they want to do it, because a lot of kids don't really even think about film and all that kind of stuff. But these kids, they want to do it. There's something different than sports. So I'm excited to be back at the same club where I coach sports at, teaching kids about film stuff.
Wow. So I also, didn't you let the kids make their own film when they was using the cameras themselves as well?
No, what it was, when we were making the film, I would let them help me with the camera stuff, just to show them how to work it. But not necessarily letting them do it on their own, but I was just letting them use it.
Okay.
So they could be familiar with it, show them how to write scripts, how to work the camera, how to concentrate on angles, how to try to deal with the coloring. And I mean, you know, stuff that I'm still learning and was learning at the time, I was just sharing it with them.
Okay. All right, and another film that I really liked was A Mother's Love.
Oh, yeah, that was touching. That was touching.
Yes.
I even liked that.
Yes.
And see, it's funny because, and Janino can tell you, I don't remember anything that I write. So when I write something, when we film it, I don't even remember what the lines are. So I'll be telling people, you know, be yourself when you're doing this, be yourself when you're doing it. I'm telling you, because I don't remember what I wrote. And I don't know why, even with my books, when I do, I just can't remember what I write. But it works for me, so I'm not going to complain about it. And when I see the films after I do all the editing and I put it together, I look at it and I'd be like, oh, man, I really enjoyed it. It's almost like it's the first time I even had a part of it, but I can't remember what was in the script.
Well, the films that you did that brought tears to my eyes was the domestic violence one and A Mother's Love and Wifey. They actually, tears to my eyes because it was just, you know, so real, you know, like, you know, the substance to the story was like so real, and I was just visualizing, you know, the guy who had beat his wife up and he had another woman and she didn't know what he was doing, and, you know, and then in A Mother's Love, how this girl was, she was going to kill to get that money to get her daughter the operation.
Oh, most definitely.
And,
Lucy Ray played that role, yes.
Right, so things like that, you know, with substance to it, you know, really are touching to me because I'm a big baby anyway. I see movies, and me and my daughter go to the movies, we be crying, and, you know, so those movies were really touching. So the listening audience, if you, pardon?
No, all I was going to say was I want to be versatile. I want people to think all I can do is just I can write about anything. I just, because I deal with so many people, and so you know, I can just take reality and turn it into a story, fictional or true, whatever. But I just want to be versatile. I don't want to be boxed in. I don't want to be, people think this is all I can do. So that's why I do so many different variety of stories.
Right, and that's the truth, because like I said, when I first, so the Hood Wives, I just was cracking up and just, you know, following you and keeping up with what you're doing. You are very versatile in your writing and the stories that you bring. They all have different substance to them. Now, Diva Wars, can you just elaborate a little bit on that? I know that was cut short and you went to doing Diva City. Diva Wars was very, that was an intense story too. The main actor in Diva Wars, what happened to her, Santiago?
I mean, she's still around. She hasn't been in any other films, but I use her in Diva Wars, and also she did a hell of a job when her name is Sunshine Brown. I also use her in another one I had. What was that film, Jadina, with Ty was hiding in the closet? Man, I can't see the name. So many movies, I can't think of anything.
She stabbed the guy who was
I don't know the name of the film. Exactly. Right.
What was the name of that?
Those are the only two films that I've seen her in. I don't know, you know, what happened to her. I mean, I don't know what she's doing. I have no idea. But I received so many phone calls about her character in Diva Wars because she was so believable. I mean, she was
right, and
her
name was Diamond in the series. And when that scene came, she said diamonds. I said, oh, it's on popping, you know, because it was thought that she was dead, and that was really, you know, how you do put the little twists and turns in your stories are so so believable.
I just want to keep people. I want to keep people entertained from the beginning to the end. I don't like, and I always use an expression when I talk about Boss with the cast members on our Boss page, I don't like walking through the park holding hand scenes. I want from the beginning to the end, I want to go from 0 to 100. Let's go, no turns, no twists, no detours, none of this. Let's go from the beginning to the end with a story that's going to keep everybody entertained, because I don't want people to be like, oh, this part is boring, that part is boring. I don't want no boredom in anything that I write.
I haven't been bored. That's a fact. I have not been bored, and I've watched your series a few times, you know, over and over, because it's just, you know, they're like that. And anytime a person goes back for more and more, that tells you something.
Yes, I appreciate that.
Yes. So how can people get in touch with you? How can they get your books? And, you know, sure. do you give them your website and, you know, information on how they can get in touch with Mitch Cradle, how they can keep up with you. They can see your series on YouTube. You have a Facebook page, and you also have a fan page on Facebook, and your books at Amazon and Barnes and Noble. So can you give them, our listening audience, that information? But before we do that, does anybody have any questions or comments they would like to make before we, you know, get ready to close the show out?
Well, I
Jade,
wish,
I see you
Mitch,
in the building.
I wish Mitch all the
I'm
best
here. I just
want to up
thank
until
Ms.
his career.
I want to say that it was a good show, and I want to thank Miss Terry because at one point I thought my mic was just turned off because I was like, hey, I got a question. So, Miss Terry, thanks for asking my questions.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, thank you, darling. What were you saying, Terry?
I was saying I really wish Mitch all the best up until his retirement because that job is not for everyone, and it takes
it's
a special person to do what you do. I know. I've been a mother of one for 20 years, and I know how important it is. It's not for everybody, and
I just wish you
all of Godspeed on your job.
Thank you very much. I most definitely appreciate that.
Yes. So, Jay Dino, do you have any questions or comments?
I have a comment that
okay.
I told him we ain't seen each other for years, and one day I ran into him downtown, and I told him we was talking and catching up or whatever, and he said, yeah, I seen you on Facebook, man, friend, you know, your friend or whatever. And I'm like, I ain't seen really nobody I went to school with like that, but when I seen him, I remember we was cool and everything. We got back together, and it was like, I'm going to be doing some stuff later, man. And I know you used to be an artist, you do this, whatever you're doing. I don't know what I want you to do yet, but we're going to do something together. And he meant it. You know, when it came time, he called me up, and you know, I've been on this hip already since. So I'm like that dog who keep putting little biscuits outside while I keep going away. But he don't kick me in the head or nothing. That's my dude. Life.
Yeah, this is my guy. This is my guy, and everybody who's listening, man, it's his turn. I'm stepping back. I'm about to film his stuff, so it's on and popping. And you always see some stuff that you haven't seen in a lot of films in DC with Gidino's very, very, very creative mind. We're gonna take it off print and put it on film, and we're gonna have some fun with it.
All right. We'll be waiting for that. We will be waiting for that. Okay, so Mitch, let everybody know. You know how they can get in touch with you.
I'm on Facebook. It's Mitch Cradle. The last name is Cradle. First name is Mitch. Mitch. You can send me friend requests. Most definitely have plenty of space for that. I have a web page, MitchCradle.com. My books are on Lulu.com, Amazon.com. and BarnesandNoble.com. And soon we have our Empower Group website set up. And anybody that's trying to catch up with me, if you want to send emails, you can send it to Mitch Cradle, same spelling, @gmail.com. And even if you want to call, you need to call for some particular reason, I have a problem, get on my phone number, which is 202-841-0140. And we have a Boss Facebook page, which is Boss, the movie. We do a lot of communications back and forth on that particular page. And just on that note, I just want to everyone that's in the Boss family, I don't know who's listening, but you all are remarkable. Y'all brought my dream to life. You all really bringing this story to a point where I didn't think it was going to occur that way. It was going to show a film. You all made me stretch to a movie. When everybody see it, they are going to love it because of you all. I can't mention everybody's names because it's 50 of you. I mentioned the first two because they are the main two characters. But you all are remarkable. I love y'all. I respect y'all. And I can't wait for people to see you all on the big screen.
Wow. Well, Mitch, we do appreciate you for stopping by Delicious Talk Radio this evening and giving up the information and, you know, we all wish you the best, and, you know, you are going to be the best in D.C. So, you know, just keep doing what you do. And this is your second home. Anytime you want to come back, when Creeps come out or another book, you're more than welcome to come back, you know, even though this is our last live show for a little while, but we'll be playing some reruns. But we're going to give you a great big round of applause.
I will definitely do that.
Right, that's from each and every one of us over here. You know, like I said, we do appreciate our guests when they come on. We most definitely do. So with that being said, Jay, do you want to let everybody know what you do and, you know, how they can get in touch with you as well?
They can just check us out tomorrow night, every Thursday night on Erotic Talk Radio, on right here on Blog Talk Radio, and check us out on our Facebook page, Erotic Talk Radio, our group page. Thanks.
Okay. All right, Terry.
Oh, here I go again. I'm just a novice writer, and I'm learning the ropes from Gail, and you can find me on Facebook at TERRIE, New Attitude Brown, hyphen Cox, COX. And if you like eating and you like good food, I put all my food on my Facebook page.
Okay, all right. Okay, Jay Dino.
Jay Dino, that's where everything art. You can reach me on Facebook mostly. You can also hit me on my Gmail at j.dinoblaskko@gmail.com. Got a lot of stuff coming up. Can't wait to get it in.
Right, we definitely know that, and we're just, you know, sitting back waiting for you guys to bring Boss to the big screen. Okay, you guys know who I am, and I just want to, you know, say Bringing Sexy Back is for the mature listening audience, and our subject matter is sometimes sexual, but not limited to other social topics. We discuss relationships, current events, issues are relevant to everyday life, and we appreciate you, Mitch Crater, for being our guest this evening and our listening
Thank
audience.
You all. Appreciate it.
Right, and if you have a topic you'd like for us to discuss or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to me. That's gjdelicious37@gmail.com. And in the subject line, type topic or guest. We're here every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, giving you guys the best adult conversation on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, bringing sexy back does not mean you've lost your sexy. Bringing sexy back is a state of mind and how you perceive yourself. Thanks, Jade, Terry, and Jadino for being my guest, my host, my co-host this evening, and my listening audience. Thank you, guys. Love you. Have a safe and wonderful weekend. Remember, if you're driving, don't drink. And if you're drinking, don't drive. I love talking to you guys, not about you. With that being said, everybody have a beautiful weekend, and see you guys whenever I get back. But I will be continue to be on Erotic Talk Radio, you know, when permitted, you know. But in any event, I do appreciate you guys for stopping by, the listening audience, and my guest co-host. And, you know, you guys take care, and I love you. And good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you, Mr. Lister.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to my Nana's Internet Radio Show, because it's the best. Good night.